If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
In a new interview, President Trump addressed the firing of FBI Director James Comey and said he should have fired Comey the day he won the primaries. Yeah, except you weren't the president then. Boy, for a guy who got famous for saying you're fired, you really don't know how firing people works.
You're fired.
Are you my boss?
No.
Well, then off.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to comedian Sebastian Maniscalco, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump has spent the week defending himself from accusations of Russian collusion and defending a Supreme Court nominee from accusations of sexual assault. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. During the campaign, Trump borrowed from years of GOP rhetoric and referred to himself as the law and order candidate. Trump used the phrase law and order more often than my cable guide. He insisted that the law should apply equally to everyone. And by everyone, he meant immigrants, people of color, and Hillary Clinton.
What makes us exceptional is that we are a nation of laws and that we are all equal under those laws. Hillary's corruption shreds the principle of which our nation was founded.
We either have a country or we don't. We're a country of laws. We either have a border or we don't.
We either have a border or we don't. Trump's brain is only capable of lies and super, super obvious truths. After all, this is the same brain that just the other day called Hurricane Florence one of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. Oh, from the standpoint of water. I'm so glad you clarified. Trump's like a college freshman trying to write a 5-page essay for a class he never attended.
In this essay, I will show that water has a high wetness level and that the general wetness of water, which is, as it relates to being watery, very wet from a water standpoint.
Donald, the margins on this paper are 3.5 inches. There you go. There you go. You heard Trump. You heard him. We are a country of laws, like, for example, election laws. And yet, Trump has spent the week insisting that the Russia probe is illegitimate. He took the unprecedented step of declassifying documents from the investigation in an attempt to undermine it. And in an interview with The Hill, he even blamed Attorney General Jeff Sessions, saying, "I don't have an attorney general. It's very sad." Oh, my God. He's like a wounded mother who just found weed in her son's sock drawer. "Get out of my house! But I'm your son! I don't have a son." And yet, while Trump undermines the Russia investigation, he also wants to make it seem like he's been tough on Russia, as he did during a press conference on Tuesday where he claimed he was countering Russian aggression with force.
I think Russia has acted aggressively. They respect force. They respect strength, as anyone does. And we have the greatest strength in the world, especially now. We were being depleted under the last administration. We had planes that were old and tired and didn't fly in some cases.
That's right. The planes wouldn't fly because they were tired. It's official. Trump thinks in cartoons. In his mind, the planes fly by literally flapping their wings, and they have faces like Thomas the Tank Engine. And yet every day, the Russia probe gets worse for Trump. Last week, his ex-campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, flipped on him, and late today, we found out that his longtime personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, met with investigators, too.
President Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, has been interviewed multiple times by special counsel Robert Mueller's team over the past few weeks, according to ABC News. The interviews have lasted for hours and been focused on Trump's dealings with Russia and any possible conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Moscow.
Damn, I'm not saying Trump is scared right now, but when he heard that, his pants were the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. So again, this is the man who said we're a nation of laws. If he's not concerned with breaking election law, then how about laws against sexual assault? What did Trump have to say when he was asked about the allegations against his Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh? Probably something like, we're a nation of laws and justice must be served. Let me lean on my fists and watch.
I feel so badly for him that he's going through this, to be honest with you. I feel so badly for him. This is not a man that deserves this.
Really, they're hurting somebody's life very badly. And it's very unfair, I think, to, as you know, Justice Kavanaugh has been treated very, very tough. And his family, I think it's a very unfair thing, what's going on. He is such an outstanding man. Very hard for me to imagine that anything happened.
Now Trump has said, he wants to hear from Kavanaugh's accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. But he also said Democrats were only coming forward with these allegations now for political reasons. What I do think is terrible is what the Democrats have done. This is no different than the Russian witch hunt. What they've done is they make up a lot of stuff and try and obstruct and resist. They make up a lot of stuff. If I started listing all the stuff you've made up, I'd still be here tomorrow during Days of Our Lives. Trump and Senate Republicans are trying to sound like they're being fair-minded, but in reality, it's clear they have no interest in getting to the bottom of what happened. One way they could do that is by asking the FBI to reopen their background check on Kavanaugh, something the FBI does all the time. But Trump has tried to make it sound like the FBI doesn't want to get involved.
What would be the problem with the FBI reopening their background investigation into Judge Kavanaugh? Would you support such a thing?
It wouldn't bother me other than the FBI, John, said that they really don't do that. That's not what they do.
So will you ask the FBI to open its file?
How important is
the— I don't think the FBI really should be involved because they don't want to be involved. If they wanted to be, I would certainly do that. But as you know, they say this is not really their thing.
It's not their thing. They're the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Investigation is in the damn name. That's like saying you don't think Taco Bell is interested in making tacos. Well, this will shock you. It turns out Trump was lying. Bloomberg News reported Wednesday that the FBI did not tell the president or the White House that it doesn't want to investigate the allegations against Kavanaugh or that it's not something the Bureau would do. The FBI could do further investigation if the White House requests it and provides direction. Of course they can. And Trump knows that. He wakes up at 5 a.m. every morning and scream tweets in all caps about how the FBI should be investigating crooked Hillary or the dirty dossier or why Rudy Giuliani's eyes are always trying to jump out of his head. Republicans clearly have no desire to get to the bottom of what happened. All they care about is getting a man accused of sexual assault on the Supreme Court so we can implement their agenda. If you have any doubt about that, watch this exchange with Louisiana Senator John Kennedy. A CNN anchor tries to explain to Kennedy calmly the details of Ford's story, but Kennedy won't have it.
You've got to have some evidence, some facts.
Okay. I heard your 3 points, and
Papa, you're better than this. Let me finish my answer.
Your third one is salient, and you said there have to be some facts, and I just want to note for our viewers the facts that the Washington Post reported, which include therapist notes from 2012,
right,
which include a polygraph test. Yes?
Can I talk now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I need to see the facts.
You're seeing them. She's literally explaining them to your face. I need to see the facts. Okay, here are the facts. Stop interrupting me with facts when I'm in the middle of demanding facts. This is my fact demanding time. Republicans are making it clear as possible that they aren't actually interested in hearing the truth about what Brett Kavanaugh did, which is infuriating since Trump and Republicans spent the entire campaign saying, we're a nation of laws. Although, in fairness, honesty is
not really their thing.
There's been a closer look. Our guest is a very funny comedian. He's currently on tour with his show Stay Hungry and is playing Madison Square Garden in January next year. Please welcome back to the show Sebastian Maniscalco, everybody. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
I'm very happy to have you here. I know you're always very busy touring. You're on your Stay Hungry tour. But you were also in Toronto last week promoting a movie you were in that was at the Toronto International Film Festival called Green Book. How was that?
So I'm not really a movie star at all, you know? So I have a red carpet there, and I'm not really used to going down the red carpet. I do stand-up comedy. There's not a lot of red carpet in stand-up. So I'm getting ready to go down. And Viggo Mortensen in the movie, Mahershala Ali, two really big, powerful actors, and they're talking to the people in line. E! Entertainment, Access Hollywood, a lot of lights, microphones with the outlets wrapped around the microphone. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the publicist's like, okay, we're gonna get you down. Just hold tight. So she finally brings me down. We pass all that, and we go to the end of the line with a guy with a selfie stick, an iPhone, a camera. He's the host, he's the boom guy, he's the camera guy. You know, he's got some website in Holland, and that was my red carpet. Every time I go down the red carpet, it's like a piss break for the photographers. Right? Because, like, Mahershala Ali, it's like lightning. And then I come down, I'm like, anybody? Anybody want to... Nothing? So,
Was it better when... I mean, that's always stressful, red carpets. Was it better once you got inside? People there happy to see you?
No. It continued. I've never been the guy included in anything. Like, it's okay. Like in high school, I was never popular. I was like, I was never on the prom court. I was like at traffic court, you know? So I'm in the movie, or I'm sitting down in the seat with my wife, waiting for the movie to come on, but the director comes out and he starts introducing the cast. And then he introduces my name, and I'm like, what? Nobody told me I was supposed to. So I'm running up the aisle to go on stage to be with the rest of the cast. We see the movie, and then he starts calling up everybody after the movie. I go, okay, nobody told me this again. Let me go back up. And he stopped at, like, the third lead. So I had to act like I was just stretching out my legs. So it's good. It's good to be wanted.
You have a 16-month-old daughter.
Yes, I do.
Does she find you entertaining?
This is bothering me. My babysitter is making my daughter laugh hysterically. So I'm in the room, and my daughter, I've never seen her laugh this way. I go, what's going on? So babysitter leaves. I go into my skit. Nothing. She's looking at me like, what are you doing? Bring back the headliner. So now I'm stealing material from the babysitter. And it's still not working. I don't know. I'm really nervous about this.
Another thing, we have children very close in age. And another thing I was very nervous about that you have coming up, preschools. Are you going through that whole song and dance now?
So I grew up in Chicago, northwest suburbs. I went to the preschool near where I lived.
Yeah.
You just signed up. Now there's like an interview process you got to go through. And my wife's like, we got an interview. I go, for what? Well, it's the preschool, so, you know, I got to be on, like, my best behavior, and I'm not really, you know, like, refined. I can't walk into the interview and go, hey, how you doing? Nice to see you. I got to be, like, like, you know, hi, my name is, I feel like I'm, you know, I got to act like I'm someone I'm not in order for my kid to get into school. I don't know. It's weird. I just wish we lived back in the suburbs.
Yeah. Last week we were at a charity event at Carnegie Hall, and you crushed. It was so fun to watch. And you have so much great material about your family. Does your family then, do they enjoy that? Do they give you feedback?
My father and mother love the fact that they're in the act. My mother is actually disappointed she's not in the act more often.
Yeah.
But my father has gotten so involved in my career that he comes to my show. I feel like I'm back in Little League because after the show, he comes with like a notepad. He's like, why didn't you do the subway bit? That kills. I go, what? This ain't Little League. He does hair for a living, and now all of a sudden he's a comedy coach. So, but it's all in good fun. My parents are my biggest fans and my.
Will your father watch this? Will he watch tonight?
Well, I keep getting calls every time I'm on a show. He calls. What time is Myers on? I go. I don't know. No. When do you go on in the show? Because I wanna, you know, watch just you. I go just record it and skip everything else. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, Dad.
I won't take it personally. This is really exciting as well. It's January, right? January 19th? Is that when
January 19th, yes.
So you're doing a show at Madison Square Garden. You just put pre-sale out. You sold out the show. So you're doing a second show.
Well, we didn't really sell out the show. Basically, the first show is just for my family.
Okay, gotcha.
So we added a second show. There's two shows available.
That's really exciting. And obviously, we're always happy to have you back in New York City doing comedy. And it's just such a pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much,
Thank
Sebastian.
You.
I really appreciate it. Sebastian Maniscalco, everybody, for more information about his tour in Madison Square Garden, says visit SebastianLive.com.
Hey, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Sebastian Maniscalco. And after you just killed out there on the show, it was really fantastic.
Thank you.
What's it like for you to do talk shows? Because you've done a lot. You're touring and you're doing talk shows, and you kill every time you're on a talk show. What's it like performing in that type of setting?
I have a lot of anxiety before I do these things, just
really?
Because I always put a lot of pressure on myself to kind of deliver. And if I don't have anxiety, I feel like I'm too comfortable and something might go wrong.
Yeah.
So, but once I get out there, I feel like I'm really kind of in the moment, and I could kind of flow with the host.
Yeah. Do you have a similar sort of feeling before you go out on stage just to perform a regular
stand-up
show?
I don't have that. I'm in control of that.
Uh-huh.
As soon as you add another person, I feel like I'm out of control, and I like being in control. That's why I do stand-up comedy. It's just when you add somebody else, the unknown is a little.
Yeah. When you're performing, do you leave room for yourself? How much room do you leave for yourself to riff and improvise versus just going up with the written set?
I never really plan what I'm going to say. I might just plan the first joke, and then I'll just kind of do my act based on what they're gravitating towards. I'm like, oh, these people really like family material. Let me give them more of that. Or if they're not liking that, I'll switch it up. So my sets are different from night to night, and I don't know what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Well, it seems like when you start stand-up comedy specifically, you have to learn how to craft a joke and how to tell a joke. How did you learn to kind of leave yourself that wiggle room to perform like that when you're on stage, to gravitate towards certain things that audiences like?
I think that's just practice. I never did that when I started out. It was kind of a 20-year training ground for me of like how audiences react, what they react to. I always like to do a little improv if I don't know where I'm going to go.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like a boxer kind of clinching the fighter to get a little rest. My clinching is maybe going into the audience. And as I'm talking to the audience member in the back of my head, trying to figure out where I'm going to go with the next joke.
So what were your first shows like?
In the beginning, it was rough. I was doing comedy in places where comedy doesn't really work. I was in a boxing ring. I was in a
I read about this. It's a boxing ring / bowling alley?
Bowling alley. So there was people picking up a spare behind me while I was trying to tell jokes and do restaurants where people were eating and had no idea comedy was even going to come. And they put up a crate in the middle or in the corner of the room, and you got on the crate and you had to do
45 minutes on a crate, you know. So all these little experiences, though, kind of you build from, and I think you need to kind of toughen your skin as a comedian.
When you're playing now in massive arenas like Madison Square Garden this January, do you prepare for the show differently, or do you use the same exact tools and not kind of let the size of the audience get in your head?
It's in the round, so I have to prepare myself to really populate the stage. Although there's screens above me, I like to move in my act in general, so the round stage actually plays to my advantage. But yeah, there's some nuances in a large arena that you don't really have in a smaller theater. The crowd might, you know, take a little bit longer to get the joke just because they're a little bit farther away. The energy is not the same. There's a lot of nuance just as a performer that I've noticed on stage performing in an arena that is way different from a club or a theater.
Yeah. You mentioned moving around in the space. You bring so much physicality to your comedy. Was that there early on?
No, I took a while to get to that point. That is just being comfortable on stage and kind of peeling back that onion to get to your true self. I mean, in when I'm talking with you here, I mean, there's hand movements and whatnot, or there could be a facial expression, but that's just kind of exaggerated when I get on stage, not only to make my point with maybe a joke that I'm doing, but I feel like the audience is a lot more engaged if there's some physicality in the act.
It was just amazing just tonight to see you kind of get up out of the chair.
That I didn't plan. You know, I'm like, oh, man, I got up and I saw the camera guy. It's like, oh, shit. Right. Can I swear on this thing?
Yeah, it's fine. You're fine.
I never know like what's good, what's not.
You can say whatever. All right, we'll bleep it if we have to, but I think we're good.
Gotcha. So, yeah, when I did that, I'm like, that was like my stand-up instinct kicking in, because typically you don't really have to worry about anything you do on stage, but sometimes on TV, you know, you forget that this is like a TV show and I'm standing up and I'm going out of frame. So yeah, that's just all instinct.
Yeah. Well, again, you were so funny tonight on the show. We're looking forward to the rest of this tour and your shows in January.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you not only having me on the show, but this little podcast in my dressing room. It's nice.
It's been really fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.